go to God in prayer. Father, we come before you this morning and we just humble ourselves. And as we read your word, Father, help the Spirit move in us. Help us to understand your words, Father, that you've written. I appreciate the study that I've had this week, Father, in Genesis. You've really opened up some things in my eyes, and I appreciate that. Father, I thank you for each one that is here, that they are willing to gather together in your name and to study your word. And I just ask, Father, that we diligently apply these words that we are going to read to our lives. And not only that, but that we share our faith with those who are around us at work and just in everyday life, the people that we meet. We just ask that you bless us as we study now. It's our prayer in Jesus' name. Amen. Well, Brother Pierce, we're going to start in chapter 15. I know we jumped through there. I got a 3-week study in chapter 15. But we're not going to do a 3-week study out of chapter 15. God had promised Abram that he was going to multiply his descendants. They were going to inhabit the land that he was in, Canaan. Okay? Well, Abram does not have any offspring yet. So in chapter 15, God comes to him and he's talking to Abram. And Abram asks in verse 2, he says, you know, I'm childless. Who's going to be my heir? Must be my servant, Eliezer. But in verse 4, God says, no, you're going to have an heir coming from your body. And God took him outside, looked at the stars, and he said, so shall your descendants be. And in verse 6, he says, he believed in the Lord, and he reckoned it to him as righteousness. In Romans chapter 4, verse 9, it talks about that was a faith that Abram had. That God promised something, Abram believed it, and there was faith there. That was long before Abram was circumcised. It was long before Isaac was born. Long before he took him and put him on an altar, Abram had faith in God. There was a promise made to Abram, and he believed it. There was faith. There's a promise for us. God says that he sent his son, Jesus died on a cross, was raised from the dead. I wasn't there. He tells me in his word. So from his word, I hear it. I can either believe it or reject it. I believe that. That is faith. God says that Jesus is coming back again. He says he's promised me a place with him in heaven. I haven't seen that. I haven't seen Jesus coming back. I have not been in heaven, but I believe God. That's faith. That's exactly what Abraham had. And we're not going to take the time, but I want you this week in some Bible study to read chapter 15, and then go to Galatians chapter 3 and 4, read that, and Romans chapter 4, and Romans chapter 9 and 10. And I want you to just do a study. Write this down, okay? If you've got time this week to do an outside study, this is what I want you to do. Read Genesis 15, Galatians 3 and 4, Romans 4, 9 and 10. I just want you to let God speak to you. That's the material that we could take 3 weeks covering and probably wouldn't even cover it then, okay? But it deals with our faith. Okay. So in chapter 16, we're going to kind of hit some highlights and try to get through some materials. If you got any questions about any material that we're covering, feel free to ask. I may skip over something that you have a question about, but we'll stop and take time to address that, okay? Chapter 16, you know, there's not a descendant. We know the story. Hagar goes in, Abram and Hagar. They have a child named Ishmael. And people question, well, you know, did they have enough faith that Sarah was going to have a baby? And I brought up the question Wednesday night that the promise was given to Abram that it was going to come from his body. And I'm not sure that Abraham understood everything that was to take place. Maybe he didn't believe it was going to be through Sarah. Maybe he thought it was through Hagar. And we see a little bit of indication of that in chapter 17 as we get into that. 17. Abram was 99 years old. It just says in chapter 16, verse 16, that Abram was 86 years old when Ishmael was born, and now he's 99. Let's see, 99, about 13 years, right? Had already passed. The Lord appears to Abram again. In verse 1, God calls Abram to walk before him and be blameless. And God is going to establish a covenant between Abram and himself, and he's going to multiply him exceedingly. I just want to stop a second to show that, yes, Abram had faith, but God requires him to walk blameless before him. He desires him to walk blameless before him. Verse 3, Abram fell on his face. Abram's prostrate before the Lord. And that usually happens when the Lord appears to somebody. Isn't that usually the response that is given? They lay prostrate before them. They humble themselves before God. Verses 4 and 5 of chapter 17. God is promising that a multitude of nations will come from him. And there's kind of a dual meaning here, okay? He's meaning the physical nation of Israel that comes from Isaac, Jacob, and his 12 sons, and the Hebrews that follow, and Moses, and that gang. But he's also talking about a spiritual one, too. A spiritual nation. If you read the chapters that I told you to read, you'll find that we have a promise, and we are a nation. Let's see if I can go to that real quick. Well, I'll tell you what, it's in one of those four chapters. I'm not going to be able to go through it, pick it out exactly, but he talks about that we are descendants, we are children of promise. Yeah, maybe I can't find that. Well, it's important. I'm sorry. It's important. Okay. Galatians chapter 3, verse 29. If you belong to Christ, then you are Abraham's descendants, heirs according to a promise. And of course, you need to read a lot of scripture before that to get to where he's going with that verse. But there's a dual meaning in verse 4 and 5. The physical descendants and also the spiritual descendants. Okay, and God says there's going to be a covenant. And he says, you know what? This is what you're going to have to do. Verse 10, this is my covenant which you shall keep between me and you and your descendants after you. Every male among you shall be circumcised. And it talks about who all is going to have to be circumcised. And then in verse 15, God says, and Sarah, he changes their name. Let's see. And it changes Sarah's name. sorry. In verse 15 and 16, he says, I will bless her, and indeed I will give you a son by her. Then I will bless her, and she shall be a mother of nations. Kings of people shall come from her. So here God gives a promise that Sarah is going to have the son.
Actually changes Abraham's name back to his father.
Okay. Thank you for that, David. I knew he changes it in there somewhere, but I couldn't remember where it was at. It was in verse 5. And Abraham basically means father of many nations. Father of many.
Hey, Brother Engel.
Go ahead.
On that exact topic there, how often thought about the meaning of the name Chambers, Saul of Tarsus, of Paul, Jacob of Israel, thought about the significance of it.
No, I was just going to pick your brain. why would God change their name, and what significance does that have? That's a good question.
New name, new change in life, change in circumstances. You know, Paul was evil Saul, and now he's good Paul. You know, maybe that delineation between what happened in the past, what's going to happen now in the future.
Okay.
My note says that Abram means exalted father. Abraham means father of many. I think it's just being becoming more specific.
Okay. And the notes I have on Sarai is that one means princess. Sarah means princess, and the other one means
princess. I don't know which one.
The other one is like little princess or something like that. Okay.
You know, when you,
yeah.
When you start looking at name changes, if somebody walked up to you tomorrow and said your name is Ben David, tomorrow it's going to be James, you will look at yourself differently. You will have a different attitude towards yourself because you have a different name. You have been David all your life, and now you're somebody else. I had a very similar situation happen at work. They told me that I should not answer as Sam because there's already another Sam, so I'm going to be Samuel. I'm 62 years old. I've never been Samuel. It didn't last very long. I'm Samuel. But you have a different attitude towards yourself. You think about things differently. And these people have been given a different name. And names meant something. I mean, you use a name enough times, it becomes just a name. Do you know what the meaning of your name is?
Mine?
Yeah.
Yeah, I looked it up once, but I can't remember what it was.
And that's it. It's just a word now. But if you were given a different name that had a meaning, that might be something that would change your attitude towards yourself as well.
So, like, if we named people like they did back then, I wouldn't be David. I'd be more like Knothead, right?
Hairy face.
Yeah. Man with hairy face.
Wait a minute, you're just off to a block.
Okay, not Ed Jr. Okay, God promises that that Sarah is going to have a son. In verse 17, Abraham fell on his face and laughed and said in his heart, will a child be born to a man 100 years old? And Sarah, who is 90 years old, bear a child. And Abraham said to God, oh, that Ishmael might live before you. I'm reading this and I'm thinking to myself that Abram has already decided in his heart who this heir is going to be that God has been talking about throughout his life. I mean, we're talking about a long stretch of life here that God has made to the promise initially and to the fruition of Isaac, okay? If I remember right, it's about 25 years. And don't quote me on that, but I believe it's 25 years from the initial promise that was given to Abram till the fulfillment of that. You talk about patiently waiting on God. I know that I don't have that kind of patience. I haven't had that kind of patience with God. I'm trying to learn that type of patience with God. To let God work in my life instead of me busting through a snowbank or whatever, plowing my own way, and then when I get to a place where I can't go any farther, I bring God up and say, okay, now which way do I go? I don't know if that makes sense or not, but think of the patience that Abram had to have. Now, here was this promise 25 years. 25 years is a long time.
You know, when I read this, that Abraham laughed, I immediately thought about when Sarah laughed and the criticism that came on her behalf. But his was not doubt as far as the New Testament in Romans chapter 4 tells us, specifically verse 20, yet with respect to the promise of God, that he, Abraham, did not believe in his belief, but given the... So when I first read that, I questioned it at the moment.
It might have been a joy.
It might have been a joy or something. So, Sarah, she struggled to know that I was saying, but
And I have a strong sense, and you know, this is coming from my perspective, okay? That Abraham believed that all these promises were going to be fulfilled through Ishmael. In fact, and I get that from verse 18. And Abraham said to God, oh, that Ishmael might live before you. And Ishmael is his firstborn. Whether it's from Hagar or from Sarah, it's his firstborn son.
And he spent 13 years believing this.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, Ishmael's about his 13 years.
Well, I think that's quite an interesting point. You know, we sometimes say that, well, Abraham just lacked patience or lacked, you know, there was a moment where he was doubting, and certainly when you put it in perspective how long he was waiting from the moment God promised, I mean, I think you can begin to understand why it is that maybe his thoughts would redirect to, well, maybe God is going to bless me in this way. And, you know, I think for us, we kind of face the same challenges. I know I do. I know, you know, I can say I have faith in God and I believe His promises. But when it comes to waiting on God's time, I'm more often ready to make a decision and go forward with it instead of waiting for God. And a lot of times, we often make those Ishmael decisions. You know, it's very hard to wait on God.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, and sometimes, like you said, sometimes we don't, so we go ahead and push the issue.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, Sarah?
A good example along his lines, you know, like those who have children who fall in love. You want them to come back now. You pray. And years go by and they haven't come back. And you think, well, maybe you're not going to. Instead of thinking, you know, God can bring them back. I mean, it might take you in his, you know, what, in his own way. But we get impatient. We sometimes just get us, you know, or mad or to a point where we just, you know, we want.
Yeah. And not only with our children, but sometimes we're impatient with brothers and sisters, saying, you know. You've been a Christian for 15 years, and this is all the... I want to say this so it doesn't come off offensive, but you've been a Christian this long, and this is all you've grown spiritually, you know. How come you're not here? You know, you should be here. Look at this brother. 2 years, and he's went from believing to, next thing you know, he's a minister at a church somewhere. Or anyway, but we're not patient with brothers and sisters either, in the same aspect that you said.
Different plants grow at different speeds.
Brother Dan.
Yet those who wait for the Lord will gain no strength. They will mount up with wings like eagles. They will run and not be tired. They will walk and not be hungry. I'm all the time running out in front of God, you know, just like that. But we've been waiting, and it's just like Christmas. We've been waiting to open those presents. I can just imagine what's in there, you know, when you're feeling you have in your head. Waiting. God bless us waiting.
Yeah.
I was thinking that too, you know, in the same line. God knew that Abraham was going to have this child by another woman. And he knew that that wasn't going to be the child. And he allowed that to happen. So we could learn exactly what we're talking about today. Yes, we're American, make mistakes, and that doesn't mean we can't pick ourselves up and keep on, keep going.
Exactly.
That's
right.
What I got from what I read.
That's a
good thing.
Yes. That is something we need to learn from the story of Abraham and Sarah. We see some of the, like Sarah doubting, you know, and we are so critical of these people when they make such a minute mistake, and we think, well, how can, you know, this guy, he just lied and deceived this other dude, which he's going to do again here in a couple more chapters with Abimelech, you know, and God doesn't do anything, you know, to him. We are so critical of that. But we see the faith of Abram and Sarah are strong, and God sees that. And I don't want to even say hopefully. I know that God works the same way with us. You know what? I'm going to fall down. And there are times that I'm going to do something that's boneheaded and stupid. And I've probably done that with some of you folks. Thanks for forgiving me. I know what you're saying, Dad.
Hey, that's some of the reasons we do.
Yes, we do.
We beat up on our brother sometimes, or all this kind of stuff. Maybe we should, we shouldn't do this.
Yeah. Exactly right. We reason things out, don't we? And God says, that's not exactly what I had in mind. Here's what I had in mind, and this is what's going to happen. Yeah. And that's basically what he's telling Abraham. No, it's not going to be Ishmael. I got another plan. Go ahead.
But isn't it good to know that even though we make boneheaded mistakes, that God's purpose, God's design, God's will is still done?
Amen.
Yeah.
He's not limited by our ignorance. God is still supreme.
Yeah. Amen. So Abraham says, you know, I got Ishmael right here, you know. Surely you can bless me through him. God says, no. Sarah, your wife, shall bear you a son, and you shall call him name Isaac, and I will establish my covenant with him for an everlasting covenant for his descendants after him. It's really interesting after that. God says, as for Ishmael, I've heard you. Behold, I will bless him too. I put the two in there. It says, I will bless him, and will make him fruitful, and will multiply him exceedingly. He shall become the father of 12 princes, and I will make him a great nation. But my covenant I will establish with Isaac, whom Sarah will bear to you at this season next year. As you go through the rest of Genesis, Ishmael is going to take a back seat, okay, and the focus is going to end up on Isaac and Jacob, and his descendants, his 12 sons, and Joseph. And we kind of follow the seed line that ends up with Christ. Does that make sense? And Ishmael isn't talked a whole lot after this. There's something I learned this week that I had never maybe picked up on before. Ishmael was circumcised when he was 13. Yeah. Now he becomes the father of like Arab nations, right? Well, somebody can answer me. I don't know if somebody can answer this question for me. Do they circumcise still? Do Arabs circumcise their males? They do? Okay. I would say because here is a covenant that God has made with Ishmael. You know, he is a descendant of Abraham. I didn't know. It was just interesting to me. I had never really picked up on that till this week when I was studying this. Abraham had faith before God told him what the covenant was going to be between him and him, between Abraham and himself. But we see the faithful obedience coming out again in Abram. God says, okay, I want you to do this. And Abraham said, all right, and did it. The faith was already there, and here's some obedience. Does that make sense? Okay. Chapter 18. Okay, we see three people coming to Abraham, and he prepares a meal for them, and they reiterate the fact that Sarah is going to have a child. Sarah hears it, she laughs. Verse 14, is anything too difficult for the Lord? At the appointed time, I will return to you at this time next year, and Sarah shall have a son. So my question is to you, is anything too difficult for the Lord? Is there anything that we can't bring before Him and ask? No, there's not. And here we have Sarah denying it, saying, I did not laugh, for she was afraid. She lied. Strike her down. Again, we're real critical, aren't we? We're real critical. I just like 15. 15 is just a great verse. She denied it. Said, I did not laugh, for she was afraid. He said, no, you did laugh. And I was just like, no, you did. Anyway. The men get up and they talk to Abraham about what they're going to do to Sodom and Gomorrah. And Abraham makes a request. Okay, And this is my perception, that he knows Lot is down there and he's concerned about his nephew Lot. And he makes a request. Hey, if you find 50 righteous people down there, would you not destroy it? Yep. 45, yep. 40. Goes right down to 10. Okay. If I find 10 righteous people there, I'm not going to destroy it. Guess what? Sodom and Gomorrah got destroyed, right? God didn't find 10 righteous people there. And when I'm reading this, I think back about the flood and the fact that he only found, you know, Noah. And here he wipes out a whole town. He doesn't even find 10. I see Jesus saying, narrow is the way. Wide is the path of destruction. And it makes me cause to think about how serious my walk with God needs to be. How serious I take that and how I live my life. because there is a judgment coming. And we see that God is a just God. I'll put it that way. But He's a just God. Again, if you got any comments or questions as we go through this, we're covering a lot of material with this. But I don't want to pass over something if you have a question. Chapter 19. We're down in Sodom. The angels show up. Wait a minute. Nope. I got one more in 18 I want to cover first. Wendy, you got to quit doing that to me. Chapter 18, 19. We'll start at 17 so we get the whole gist here. The Lord said, "Shall I hide from Abraham what I am about to do, since Abraham will surely become a great and mighty nation, and in him all the nations of the earth will be blessed? For I have chosen him in order that he may command his children and his household after him to keep the way of the Lord." There's a commandment for Abraham to show his people, to show his sons, to show his children the way of the Lord. Do we have that same commandment as Christians today? You bet we do. That is one of our obligations as parents, is to show our children the way of the Lord. Command his children and his household after him to keep the way of the Lord by doing righteousness and justice, in order that the Lord may bring upon Abraham what he has spoken about him. I just wanted to bring that up, that that was one of the things that God expected of Abraham. Okay, chapter 19, we see the angels go down to Lot. Lot convinces them to stay with him. And so they stay with him. And later on, the men of the city come out and they want to have relationships with these angels that showed up at Lot's door. Response of Lot is to offer up his two daughters, and the angels grab Lot and bring him in because the people of the city are starting to press against him. And in verse 12 and following, then the two men said to Lot, "Whom else have you here? A son-in-law and your sons and your daughters, and whomever you have in the city, bring them out of this place. We're about to destroy this place, because their outcry has become so great before the Lord that the Lord has sent us to destroy it." And Lot went and spoke to his son-in-laws, and they thought, "Yeah, this guy's kidding, you know." The response that the son-in-laws give to Lot is the same response that I get a lot of times when I talk to people about Jesus, you know, and it's like, "Well, yeah, okay. You know, aren't you going to die someday?" "Well, yeah." "Do you believe that you're going to live forever?" Or, you know, all these things that you're trying to accumulate, are they going to, you know, what's going to happen after you die? You know, somebody else is going to get them, but yet they still are pursuing earthly things. You know, it's like, for me, it's hard to get them to understand, okay? Let's just put it that way. And the sons-in-laws who were to be married to his daughters, you're just kidding with us, right? In the morning, the angel said, "Hurry up, take your wife, your daughters, and get out of here." And in verse 16, he hesitated. You know? Which again, I read that and I'm thinking, I look at myself a lot, you know? He's hesitating. But the angels, we just went through this whole thing that these guys are coming in all that surrounds that, and I'm going to destroy this place, and he hesitates. And why does he hesitate? You can speculate about all that. About, I don't want to move. you know, I got a good job here. All the things that you can speculate about. So the men seized his hand, took his wife and daughters, for the compassion of the Lord was upon him, and they brought him out, put him outside the city. He says, get out of here. Escape for your life. Go up into the mountains. No, I don't want to go to the mountains. I want to go to this little town over here called Zoar. Can I just go over here to Zoar? Yeah, okay, you can go to Zoar. By the way, he ends up in the mountains after when he's all done. He ends up in the mountains, so he should have just started there in the first place, right? And we know, you know, this is one of those stories that we, when we are taught over and over in Sunday school as you're growing up, you know, the wife's Lot turned around, looked back, she became a pillar of salt, and, you know, and Sodom and Gomorrah was destroyed. And Abraham looked at it, and all he saw was smoke and like a big furnace, you know. There was judgment, God's judgment. And it wasn't something that was pleasant at all. Lot goes up and he's in the mountains. His daughters make him drunk. They go into him and they become pregnant by their father. And the firstborn bore a son and called his name Moab. He is the father of Moabites to this day. And the younger, she also bore a son and called his name Ben-Ami. He is the father of the sons of Ammon to this day. And just a trivia question. Do you remember a famous Moabite from the Bible? Anybody? Yeah, Ruth was a Moabite. Yeah.
The letters of 2 Peter and Jude use the story of Sodom and Gomorrah as an example of the eternal punishment. It's kind of a symbolic thing that happens to Jude, verse 7, 2 Peter, chapter 2, verse 6, says that they serve as an example of those who suffer the punishment of eternal fire. So again, you know, God's judgment is not pleasant, but there is also an availability of escape, and 2 Peter points that out, that Lot, the righteous man, escaped that punishment.
Let's all turn to 2 Peter chapter 2. This would be a good one to read this time. This is what we read. Was it last week or the week before that? I don't remember. But let's read 2 through. Let's go 2 through 11, or chapter 2, 1 through 11. And being as you brought that up, David, would you just read that whole thing for me, please?
But there are also false prophets among the people, just as there will be false teachers among you. They will secretly introduce destructive heresies, even denying the sovereign Lord who bought them, bringing swift destruction on themselves. Many will follow their shameful ways and will bring the way of truth into disrepute. In their greed, these teachers will exploit you as stories they have made up. Their condemnation has long been hanging over them, and their destruction has not been sleeping. For if God did not spare angels when they sinned, but sent them to hell, putting them into gloomy dungeons to take over judgment, if he did not spare the ancient world when he brought the flood on its ungodly people, but protected Noah, a preacher of righteousness, and 7 others, if he condemned the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah by burning them to ashes and made them an example of what is going to happen to the ungodly, and if he rescued Lot, a righteous man, who was distressed by the filthy lives of lawless men, for that righteous man, living among them day after day, was tormented in his righteous soul by the lawless deeds he saw and heard. If this is so, Then the Lord knows how to rescue godly men from trials and to hold the unrighteous for the day of judgment while continuing their punishment. This is especially true of those who follow the corrupt desire of the sinful nature and despise authority. Bold and arrogant, these men are not afraid to slander celestial beings. Yet even angels, although they are stronger and more powerful, do not bring slanderous accusations against such beings in the presence of the Lord.
Verse 9, the Lord knows how to rescue the godly from temptation. And he keeps the unrighteous under punishment for the day of judgment. And we see in this reading that Lot was a righteous man in God's eyes. And verse 29 of chapter 19, it came about when God destroyed the cities of the valley that God remembered Abraham and sent Lot out of the midst of the overthrow when he overthrew the cities in which Lot had lived. Abraham made a request of God that if you find 10 righteous people in the city, are you going to destroy them? God said, nope, I won't. He did destroy Sodom and Gomorrah, but he brought Lot out. And the question I have, I guess, for myself is, how much persuasion did Abraham have with the Lord? With what transpired with Lot? It's kind of like a request or a prayer. You know, we go to God with our prayers and our requests. How much did God listen to that, and how much did it affect what he did with Sodom and Gomorrah and Lot? If you would have found 10 people, do you think you would have destroyed Sodom? I know the answer to that. No. Because he said he wouldn't. You know? God's promises are true.
It says somewhere in the Testament that the people of Sodom will stand in judgment of unrighteous people.
Yeah. Yeah, the things that they were doing are mild compared to... Who was he talking to? The Pharisees at that time? Yeah. Or was it Tyre and Sidon? Or was it, I know which quote you're talking about. I think the Tyre and Sidon was involved with that too, that they were judged, but yet they will judge the people that Jesus is talking to. Okay, chapter 20, Abraham and Abimelech. I'm going to get you up to the birth of Isaac, okay, Brother Pierce? We have a similar story with Abimelech as what we'd had before. Abraham says, hey, tell this guy that you're my sister. And that's what they do. And Abimelech, God comes before Abimelech in verse 6 and says, he comes before that. Verse 3, behold, you are a dead man because of the woman whom you have taken, for she is married. Now Abimelech says, hey, I'm innocent, you know. This guy lied to me. How are you going to destroy me? God says, I know the integrity of your heart. You have done this. And I also kept you from sinning against me. Therefore, I did not let you touch her. And again, this has to do with the fact that Isaac's going to be coming along here pretty soon. And we didn't want to have any question on where this kid came from. Okay. Basically, Abimelech talked to Abraham about this encounter, and Abraham says, hey, I thought it was because you guys didn't fear God, verse 11, but I said this, and I was afraid you were going to kill me. Besides, she is my sister. We talked about that before. So I didn't really lie. It was kind of a white lie. It was kind of a half lie. Interesting part of the story is that God had closed up all the wombs of the maids and the women of Abimelech. But after this episode, he opened them back up so that they could have children. That was just interesting to me. Okay, go ahead, David.
Just one other side note. When previous incident happened in Egypt during the time of the famine, you know, the Egyptian pharaoh was rid, they just basically ran out of town, like, get out of here. But Abimelech actually blesses Abraham in a way, because it says that he brought sheep and cattle and slaves, and he gave them to Abraham before they left. So evidently there wasn't hard feelings in spite of the situation that Abraham could have been left, because Abimelech still gave him gifts, if you will, before he sent him on his way. That's an interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting, because I probably wouldn't have responded that way if somebody lied to me. I'd probably told him, get out of town, don't come back. Okay, Wednesday night, we'll start in chapter 21. Thanks for your attention and your time.